the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
All right, Patrick Stevens writes about college sports, football and basketball for the Washington Post. He joins us here, Sports Map Radio. Patrick, we're going to hear from the committee again. Obviously, there's going to be some change with Oregon getting blown out last Saturday. What's your prediction on what they'll have as their top four?
Well, what I can tell you about the prediction for this top four is that it doesn't mean anywhere near as much as what the prediction for two top fours from now is. I try not to pay too much attention to what they say, frankly, because they contradict themselves so often. But ultimately, I suspect that we'll see, some combination of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State up there, and maybe even Cincinnati in that top four. Maybe it's Michigan. But ultimately, when you look at Ohio State and Michigan, that's basically two teams for one spot since they're playing this week.
Right. I mean, Cincinnati, I would think, like you say, even if for some reason they leapfrog Michigan ahead of them, it doesn't mean anything because, like you say, the two teams are going to play Saturday. That will kind of play itself out. I think Cincinnati, even though this hasn't happened before, where the, Central Florida was undefeated in the same conference, they couldn't really get a sniff of the top four. But I think things look good for Cincinnati because Alabama's got to play Georgia. Alabama could lose that game, the Ohio State-Michigan game. Do you agree that the chances are pretty decent that we are going to see Cincinnati in the playoff?
I think it's looking that way. I do think the wild card scenario for Cincinnati that may not work out for them is you get an Alabama over Georgia in the SEC title game. You get either Ohio State or Michigan gets to 12-1. And then maybe Oklahoma State or Oklahoma at 12-1 possibly. One of them it would have to win two pretty good games in the next 2 weeks. To get to that point, so maybe that's a scenario that plays itself out. But I think, to me, the victory at Notre Dame continues to be the thing that works in Cincinnati's favor. And when you look at what Notre Dame's been doing, granted, not against the strongest of schedules here down the stretch, but you look at this month, obliterated a struggling Navy team, obliterated Virginia, just absolutely destroyed Georgia Tech. And chances are good, if you're trying to pick a team in a power conference that appears to have packed it in, that's not Georgia Tech, you would probably pick Stanford at this point. And, of course, that's who Notre Dame plays this week. See, so Cincinnati's probably going to have a road victory over an 11-1 Notre Dame team, and that's probably going to hold up better than anything either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State has, even if both of them do, or either of them, I should say, does get to 12-1.
Well, yeah, and look, there's still a lot of things that could happen, including Cincinnati losing, maybe not Friday against East Carolina, but Houston is a really good team, right? So,
yeah, there's no guarantees there. I will say that you had to be impressed with the way Cincinnati responded when faced with what everybody kind of thought was one of the top two or three teams in the American and just absolutely pounded SMU this past weekend. I would argue that, headed to Greenville, to play East Carolina, an improved East Carolina team, that's a really tough environment to go into. So I don't think that's necessarily a gimme, particularly on a shortened week, and especially coming off the sort of game where is Cincinnati realistically going to play as well as it did last week? Probably not. So I think there are two tricky games left, but if Cincinnati handles its business, you can certainly sit there and, at the very least, say that they've done everything possible under the sun to get the job done and get into that playoff.
All right. A couple other scenarios. If depending on what some other things happen, like maybe Cincinnati getting knocked off, if Alabama loses a close game to Georgia, could we see a two-loss Alabama team in the playoff?
I suppose it's possible, but you'd probably be going off a brand as much as anything else at that point. I mean, think about it. What really has Alabama done this year? They beat Mississippi. That's a good Mississippi team, 9-2, that they beat. But beyond that, what have they really done? They've beaten Mississippi State. That's solid, 7-4 Mississippi State team. They beat Tennessee and Miami. They beat a good Arkansas team at home by a touchdown. I don't know if this is as strong a resume as you would anticipate Alabama having it 11-2. And obviously, in the scenario you lay out, that's a close loss to a likely undefeated Georgia and a close loss on the road to Texas A&M. So it's not like there's anything bad, but you know, we haven't seen a two-loss team yet get picked. It would be a team that obviously didn't win its conference championship. I have a feeling that if we do see a two-loss team in the four-team era, however long that lasts, that it'll probably be a conference champion. I see Alabama getting left out in that scenario with two losses.
And remember, Alabama nearly lost to Florida, who ended up as a horrendous team and fired their coach, but they did almost beat Alabama. Now, let me ask you about Notre Dame. Let's say Cincinnati's removed, the fact that they lost to Cincinnati. If they're considering Notre Dame, in the back of these people's minds, and I know it's Notre Dame and you want Notre Dame in a playoff, but they've been so bad when they've gotten their chances, even going back to the old BCS 1-2. Does that hurt Notre Dame's chances?
I don't think it does. I think that that Cincinnati game is really the big impediment for them, because you're certainly not going to put them in ahead of Cincinnati. But even if both teams have one loss, I mean, it's not like Notre Dame is running around with a ton of victories that you're looking at, a ton of accomplishments that you think, gosh, these guys were fabulous this season. I mean, they just didn't have a particularly great schedule. I mean, you could argue that the victory over Purdue is one of the best things that they've done this season. So I think that for Notre Dame, I mean, I think they basically need the two Big 12 teams to kind of cannibalize each other. They probably need Alabama to lose. And then they probably have to hope that what they've done is theoretically 11-1. Let's assume that they pick off Stanford, is going to be enough to get the job done. But I don't know if they can hopscotch Cincinnati. They certainly can't hopscotch an undefeated Cincinnati. But you know, it's also not hard to imagine the committee ignoring that head to head if both teams have one loss.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Patrick Stevens with us from the Washington Post here at Sports Map Radio. So a couple other things. I don't know if you're a Heisman. Are you a Heisman voter, Patrick?
I am not a Heisman voter.
Everyone else. Somehow I remember when I was 22 years old, I was working at this radio station. I opened up the mail, and lo and behold, I'm a Heisman voter. I didn't even know it. But this is a strange year. C.J. Stroud, you know, probably won a lot of votes last week, but he could throw three interceptions Saturday at Michigan, and I don't know. I mean, how do you handicap the Heisman race?
Well, I think there's obviously a lot of guys sitting around right now that have a chance to have marquee games over the next 2 weeks. You know, I think Bryce Young, with the numbers that he has at Alabama, probably, I would say, has the inside track. And if he can have a big game against Georgia, and if the Crimson Tide wins that SEC title game, you know, it's hard to beat those marquee quarterbacks on top five teams. I mean, that's sort of how the award has largely trended over the last 20 years or so. You mentioned C.J. Stroud. He's kind of in the same boat. I think he improved his chances. Kenneth Walker III, it's not his fault that Michigan State really couldn't use him a whole lot. And he was banged up a little bit too, but that game got away from him so much you weren't going to see him have one of those 25-carry, 150-yard days against Ohio State. I think Will Anderson, the linebacker slash edge rusher for Alabama, is kind of the sneaky variable in all of this. I mean, I think if we're sitting here saying if there's ever going to be a year where you're going to pick another, you know, primarily defensive player, you know, another Charles Woodson, this might be the year for it. I mean, this is not somebody that has much of isn't getting much credit for special teams or anything here either. He's a guy that has just simply been an incredibly dominant figure I believe he leads the country in sacks and tackles for loss at this point. The numbers are pretty incredible. He keeps having multiple tackles for loss, another sack or two every week. And I think if he can have a monster finish, you know, maybe he's a guy that factors into this thing as well.
You know, we've been waiting a long time for something like that. All right, let me ask you about these coaching vacancies. Obviously, a lot of big name schools. LSU, USC, now we add Florida, throw in Washington. Let's say you were a coach, whatever, and a former coach, assistant, whatever, someone who had a choice. What do you think is the best job? What's the best place to go? I mean, these SEC schools, we know there's tremendous pressure. You know, you have one down year and you're out. It's hard with Nick Saban in that conference. So what's the best job that's open right now, you think?
Well, you know, the last three guys who were at LSU all won national titles.
That's pretty good.
And you have in Saban and then Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. And then you could think of it as you've got an entire state where you're the only high major, you know, power conference school, and a talent rich state at that, where you kind of have that monopoly. Plus, you know, you're not that far away from places like Houston, where you're able to get a lot of good players too, you know, out of the eastern portion of Texas. So, you know, I think of that as it's kind of hard to mess that one up. Which kind of when you have a sort of longer historical perspective, it's amazing that LSU had the 1990s that they did, basically, where they were a complete non-entity. But since then, you know, the three different coaches with national titles. Yes, Nick Saban is in that division. He's not going to be in that division forever, but you know, there's no sign that he's really willing to slow down just yet. That said, I think that is, despite the pressure, probably the best available job at this point.
All right, before I let you go, let me ask you a college basketball question, because I know you're right about that. I mean, we got 1-2 tonight, which is, you know, incredibly early in the season and won't really mean anything in the big grand scheme of things. But this is very rare to have a 1-2 game, right, this early in the season. I mean, I'm going to watch this game tonight. Gonzaga, UCLA, remember what a great game they had at the Final Four. Any thoughts on this game tonight?
Well, I was certainly impressed watching UCLA gut out that victory over Villanova about a week and a half or so ago. And they obviously have so many of the pieces back, pretty much all five starters from that run to the Final Four last season. And meanwhile, Gonzaga blew the doors off of Texas, basically, you know, 12-point victory, just super efficient on offense. They continue to basically have that identity of just being able to score at will. It's a huge week for them because they've got Duke on Friday in Vegas as well. They've got Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren. You know, I think that has a chance to be another fabulous game between those two teams. I think for Gonzaga, maybe a little more at stake just because they probably can't count on as much of getting a bump from their conference. That said, the WCC is off to a really good start this season. You know, BYU's 4-0 with a victory over Oregon. We saw last night, you know, Santa Clara was able to pick off, I'm trying to remember who it was off the top of my head. They picked off TCU, and they're 5-0 at this point. They've also beaten Stanford. You look at San Francisco's undefeated. So there's actually some decent teams out there. But that said, I still think there's a little bit more at stake for Gonzaga, and I do think it'll be a fabulous early season game. It's certainly worth taking the time to watch tonight.
Absolutely. Hey, great stuff, Patrick. Appreciate the time. Have a good
holiday. Thanks so much for having me.
Patrick Stevens, check him out, Washington Post. Mostly college football, little college hoops as well. And Dick Vitale is doing the game tonight. And look, I understand if you're not a fan of Dick Vitale. I mean, by now, I mean, he's been doing this forever, and we know the shtick and all that. But the guy is just off chemotherapy. And look, I worked at ESPN for a long time. Didn't know him well, but I was at a restaurant once in Sarasota because my parents were down there. And he has this restaurant that he always goes to. And went up to him with my two sons, and they, you know, he couldn't have been nicer. In fact, he sent them an autographed book in the mail. I get this, you know, book from Dick Vitale, autographed, addressed to my kids. I mean, he is a really good guy. He's worked this shtick. It's been successful for him. Understand that there are people who are not going to be Dick Vitale fans, but knowing what he's gone through, he's fighting cancer. He's also done unbelievable amount of work in the Jimmy V Foundation to raise money to fight against cancer. Now he's dealing with the fight himself. It is just awesome. Awesome baby that he's doing this game tonight. Number one versus number two. I'll be watching. Take a final time out and then wrap things up on this Tuesday morning, Sports Map Radio.